the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to part two of the podcast that I did back in July with Atuksha Poonawasi. If you've not heard part one, then please go listen to that. Other than that, I hope you enjoy part two.
Now, you guys don't believe in doing just one or two things at a time, do you, really? So let's just talk about, you've got your CRM ongoing, you've got your books ongoing, you've got your crowdfunding ongoing, and you're also very successful in property. More than likely because you have an awesome coach. I happen to be your coach. but actually, I think you guys would be successful doing anything, quite honestly. We could drop you in a desert with nothing and you would just, you know, I'd come back 2 weeks later and you'd have built a palace or something, you know?
Oh, thanks, Dan.
No, it's just the way that you guys are. You just work very well together, and we sort of talked about that a little bit at the start of the call, didn't we? So just talk to me a little bit about property, and specifically I want to know, why did you get into property? What was the reason for it? Was there a trigger that made you think, oh, we need to do this now? What was that?
It wasn't anything like that. We decided to get into property because we thought, why not? And actually, I was working, so our first property we purchased was in Folkestone, and I was doing quite a lot of work, CRM work, for Eurotunnel at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was spending an awful lot of time there, and the properties are just so beautiful. Old Victorian buildings, absolutely stunning. And so we started looking, and we came across this one property and thought, you know what, this needs quite a lot of work, but it looks really nice, potential's there, so we thought we'd give it a go, and that's how it started.
I see, okay. And so, like, for me in property, my trigger was that I hated work just like you wouldn't believe, and I hated my bosses. And I was just desperate to get out of work so I could just be my own boss. And that was my trigger. But for you guys, it wasn't anything as dramatic as that. It just seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah. It was like, we should try it and see how we get on.
And how did you get on? I mean, I already know the answer to that, but...
you know, that was a complete gotten redo, that one. And, you know, to the point where the curtain rails... were only, you know, the sliders of the curtains, they were only working because someone had greased them with Vaseline.
Nice.
It was just absolutely awful, and it was a complete gutter redo, and the ceilings are like 13, 14 foot high, and the rooms are so big, you could get a flat in one of the rooms. But, you know, the end result was just absolutely amazing. We restored it. We went way over budget. But in the scheme of things, it was still okay. And, you know, it's doubled in value. So we've done quite well from it. But it was more luck rather than anything else. Yeah. It was definitely not planned in terms of how we were going to do stuff.
And I assume that your strategy on getting stuff done in property, that's changed considerably then.
Yeah, absolutely. Give it to someone else.
Yeah. So it's easy when you don't have to do anything.
Yeah. I absolutely love doing it, but they take time. And so now our strategy is we work with a number of different sources and developers, builders, and... whilst we keep an eye on everything and we do go and see properties regularly, we don't actually get involved in terms of the renovations and any of that anymore.
And in terms of strategy, what is the current strategy? So is it you buy, you don't do any work and you hold, you buy, you do some work and then you remortgage and hold, you buy, you do up and sell? What's the strategy looking like? Or is it a combination of those?
Combination. So... we, since all the properties we'd purchased, we'd actually never sold one. And so we sold one, our first one we sold probably about 2 months ago. We complete in terms of sale on another one, hopefully next Friday. But our strategy is buy a property. Some of them have been complete gut and redos. And then remortgage, and we've done that. So the remortgages have all happened. Others, it's a lick of paint, a bit of a tidy up, and then just rent it out. So the properties we've got now, we want to keep moving forwards. At the moment, we're looking at HMOs, but we're also looking at development projects as well. So sort of working on bigger stuff rather than sort of standard three-bed terrace houses or, you know, posh flats.
See, what happens is most people, they want to get to the advanced stuff first, and it doesn't work like that. You know, if we were to graph the property purchase for most people, there are always exceptions to the rule, and we know people who've gone out and bought 50 properties. I spoke to Jim Halliburton, and he bought 50 properties in a year, but Jim's an exceptional guy that can do that after being in the business for 20, 25 years.
Wow.
But he learned the basics. He bought normal, you know, 1-2-bed properties like everybody else does to begin with. There's a great basketball player called Larry Bird. My sport that I used to play is basketball, and as you know, I'm height challenged at 5'7". I should have been a jockey or something like that. But anyway, there's this guy played for Boston Celtics in the 80s, and he said that once you've got the basics down, like passing, dribbling, shooting, then you can start to get a little bit more fancy. There's too many people trying to get fancy straight away. And, you know, I also say that you get paid twice. The first is in experience, and then the second is in cash. Everybody wants the cash and ain't prepared to do the experience. But in property, if you don't go through the experiential bit, it'll bite you quite harshly. And people have gone bust for that, especially when a recession hit. Now, what I like about you guys is you've gone through the experiential, and you've grown because of you've now got that experience to be able to do that.
Mm. And it's something we feel more comfortable with. The smaller ones, we know they're going to rent because of the demand in that area, and they're stable.
Yeah.
There's obviously more risk, there's more cash injection, everything else. Dynamics change when you go to development projects and much larger properties, even if they're conversions, that type of thing. And yeah. So you just need to be aware of what can go wrong. Because if you start on a massive project and you get your costs wrong, as most people will do for their first property, if it goes up by 20% or 30%, that's actually quite a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. And if you've not got that money, you end up with a house that's half finished. You can't rent it, can't sell it. You just got to get rid of it, you know, or try and raise some money somehow.
Yeah, but also you then end up really disheartened about the whole experience.
Yeah.
The majority of people do, and they'll walk away from it. And actually, there's so much to be gained from being in property, and it is an amazing place to be, but it's just building it consistently and with a decent structure behind you. I think that's really quite important.
One of the reasons it took me so long to buy property, so I started looking at age 20 and I got my first at 26. And one of the reasons why it took me so long was my environment telling me that I shouldn't, you know, mum and dad basically telling me that I shouldn't. But then also you get to hear some horror stories from other people who know people who know people. it's never first hand, is it? You know, it's always people who know people. The horror story I heard was, I don't want to do property because a friend of mine did that, and the tenants just stapled pizza boxes to the walls. It was in a student area. And then I actually thought, well, let's just write the numbers down based on that. So how long will it take me to remove pizza boxes? Imagine a front room covered in pizza boxes. How long will it take me to remove all the pizza boxes? A couple of hours, fine. And then maybe I need to strip the wallpaper, replaster and repaint. How long or how much would that cost? I don't know. A couple of hundred quid for the stripping of wallpaper, £300-£400 for replastering, a couple of hundred quid for paint. Maybe £800 to £1,000. Let's just assume. But then we've got a deposit, you know, £500-£600. It might only cost me £500 or £600. Well, if I'm making £250 a month, it's only going to cost me 2 months' worth. And that one horror story stopped me from investing for years.
Yeah.
And now when I look back, I'm like, 500 quid is nothing compared to the amount of rent that comes in each month. It's insignificant. And yet that sort of thing stops you from doing it.
I think the difference is you now know what's actually involved to correct it. Whereas if you don't know about property, you don't know about doing up houses and all of that stuff, then I can see why people would just walk away from it and believe that that's an absolute showstopper, because they just don't know.
And they're getting their knowledge from people who also don't know.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that.
Who've seen it on TV. So you've got people like Phil and Kirsty on Location, Location, Location. And I see Phil, who's an ex-estate agent, and he puts an offer in on a £300,000 house, and he puts it in at £297,500. And I'm yelling at the screen, you know, it's just, that's what? It's less than 1% off, for goodness sake. Like, you know, it's just crazy. Why are you putting, you should put an offer in at £250,000. You might upset a couple of people. So what? You know, this is your money, not theirs. Yeah, you might only get it for £275,000, but at least you saved another £25,000. But again, people watch TV programs or they speak to their friends down the pub and they think that's real life. And we all know, again, I was talking to, it was today, I was talking to Jim Halliburton, and he's been on TV, and we were saying, sometimes, Jim, you come across a little bit like Rigsby, you know, remember the original Rising Damp TV program?
Yeah.
And I said, it's just editing that makes you look like that. And we talk about some of Jim's charitable work, which he was really proud of. That never gets mentioned on TV, but it's all, and I've been on TV and it's, you know, I was there for the whole day. I was on telly for 2 minutes. And it's like, what about all that great stuff I've talked about? That's not in there, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's not the real world. In NLP, we would say the map is not the territory. What you see on TV is not reality. So in property, then, we've talked about what was the trigger, and it wasn't necessarily a specific trigger that stopped you or prevented you, rather, from getting into property. It was just something that you fell into. And obviously that decision was made at the time. Looking back at that decision, that's clearly been the right decision for you.
Absolutely. And hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
it is.
If I'd bought, what I should have done is, as soon as the first one was finished, just move straight on to the next one and the next one and the next one. Yeah, that's what I should have done, because I absolutely enjoyed it. I loved the transformation as well. And there's just something really lovely about property. I can't describe it. But it's in my blood. It's in Devin's blood. Devin looks at properties in a very different way as well. And yeah, we both absolutely adore them.
And in the next 10 years, what's that going to look like for you guys?
What, property?
No, just where do you think you'll be? What will you be doing? And so you've got a number of disparate areas. So you've got your CRM, you've got property, and you've got crowdfunding. And you've written 2 books so far. I imagine there'll be more books in the pipeline.
Don't forget the app that's coming out as well.
Yeah, I'm going to move on to it. Okay, so answer the first question. The first question was, what's the next 10 years going to look like? And then talk to me about the app, because the app will obviously take place in over the next 10-year period anyway.
The next 10 years is getting the businesses established and possibly sold, one of them at least. And having more property, so that, but you know, the property should at that point just be ticking over and doing its own thing, have other people to sort of manage it more so than we're doing. We do have sort of managers at the moment, but just to give the portfolio to someone and say, okay, just deal with it and get back to us with any problems. Because I think for us, it's about spending more time doing the other things that we love. Devin loves jumping out of planes and climbing and stuff like that. So
hopefully with a parachute.
Yeah, with a parachute. Whereas I want to get into aerobatics. So it'd be nice to spend more time on things like that. But also, we're really keen on, really keen to sort of kick off homeless projects and sort of incorporate property, but also work with homeless charities and just trying to get people off the streets, because it's often the case that it's not the people on the streets, it's not their fault they've ended up in a situation and it's not good. And sometimes you just need a little bit of a helping hand, don't you, to get back on the right track. And so we're really quite passionate about wanting to tie property projects into that and finding a way to do that. So that's
obviously that's something that's close to my heart, as you know, because the Lufia project, which is the backpack, just handing backpacks out to homeless people. And interestingly, on the podcast with Francis Dolly, he was really interested in that. And with a podcast with Jim Halliburton, he was really interested in that as well. And I think it's quite interesting. When you get into property, you realise about housing. And, you know, people say housing should be a human right. And I absolutely agree. It should be a human right. I find it abhorrent in today's society that we have people on the streets because apparently there's not enough housing.
Mm.
Now, I recognise that the reason we're on the streets is nothing to do with housing. It's just an excuse that people in government choose to use. There are other reasons, usually some sort of, I'm going to use the term mental health, but I'm not sure I mean mental health. I mean, sometimes people are just depressed, can't see a way out, they end up being homeless, can't get a way back in. And that's come about because they made a mistake, you know, they played the music too loud or the partner cheated on them or whatever, they fell out with mum and dad. And, you know, we all find ourselves from time to time going through certain situations which we regret. You know, our own actions or the actions of other people, but we find ourselves homeless, whatever. I'm fortunate, I've never been homeless, by the way, so sounding like I have been, I haven't. Although I feel like I've been close to it a couple of times with mortgage payments right at the start of my investing career.
Yeah.
But
there has to be a way. It's a vicious circle once that happens. So if you don't have an address, you can't get a job, you can't do this, you can't do that. And so it's just finding a way. And there are some fantastic charities out there. As you know, we sort of give out packs every month now as well. Yeah. And it's just finding a decent way to tie in property. Because if we can do whatever we want to do, which will be the case in the next few years, then it's a really good way to start exploring how we can help others, because I think it then it feeds itself, doesn't it? Because if people are off the streets and they're actually doing okay, then they're more likely to want to help others to do the same, and it just makes it look a bit better for everybody, doesn't it?
I agree. I actually, just before the election, wrote a letter to my MP, and I mean, I don't vote, by the way. I just refuse to vote. It's not apathy. I just don't see the point. If I want to change the world, I'm going to change it. I'm not going to rely on some MP to do it. But anyway, I wrote to my MP and I asked him to come out with me. And he said if he'd get re-elected, he would do. And he has been re-elected, so I'm going to write back to him now and say, right, when are you available? Come out, because I go out with the kids and hand backpacks out and we sit and speak to some of the homeless people. But I just think it's really important to do. But I also asked the MP, and I wrote a letter about why do we not have a bottom-up policy that starts at the very bottom, and the people on the very bottom, obviously, are those people without a home over the head or shelter of some form. You know, on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, shelter is right at the bottom of that pyramid, and yet there are people out there who haven't got shelter. Well, if that's a basic human need, I would suggest that the government's actually committing a human rights offence. It's a basic human need, and people haven't got that, you know?
Mm.
But from a bottoms-up perspective, you go out and you help people no longer be homeless. Of course, I don't think it will ever be 100% non-homeless. There will always be people becoming homeless, but they should be in some sort of system. And then after homeless people, I don't know who the next most needy people are. I would imagine it's children in poverty.
Hmm.
I would imagine, which I think also is an educational issue with those parents. But it should be a bottoms-up policy. Instead, we've got a top-down policy where, well, let's start with the bankers, because we've done that very well, haven't we? Not. You know, but that seems to be the policy, is this top-down perspective. It just doesn't help anybody but themselves. It's just very weird. And as I said in a number of podcasts, we want to be the change that we want to see in the world. And, for example, people like you and I going out and other people listening from podcasts, we've probably dropped about 1,000 backpacks now, you know.
That's fantastic. That's really good.
And, you know, it doesn't give them a home, but it gives them hope.
Yeah, and actually the feedback we get is quite amazing. The fact that people, at the beginning, people used to sort of say things like, why are you doing this? But just seeing the joy on their faces, like, you actually care enough to do something like this, it's just in itself is amazing. So, and if it brightens up their day and gives them food and drink and all the other bits and bobs that they need for a few days, it's less time that they need to worry about. It takes a little teeny weeny bit of the pressure off, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I don't know if I've told you this story. It was last year. It was my birthday, which is in July. I have one every year. So this particular one was last year, and it was a really hot, sunny day, and my wife was over in England. My two children were in England, and they went out and got me a present for my birthday. And so I handed them the keys, and we all wanted a McDonald's milkshake. So I said, look, I'll go to McDonald's, I'll grab the milkshakes, here's the keys, you guys go to the car, and you can put my present in the back of the car so I won't see it.
Mm.
So that's fine. They went off to the car, and I went to McDonald's, and we got, it was a red hot day, and we got four milkshakes, three strawberry and one banana. So I'm walking back to the car, and there's this homeless guy, and he looks hot. He's sat in the shade with his back against the wall, but he looks like he's really hot. So I look at him, and I look down at these milkshakes, and I'm like, oh, for goodness sake. Because I knew the thought process that was going to hit me, which was, I need to give this guy one of his shakes. Mm. And I'll be honest, I really didn't want to. I couldn't give him the wife, because, God, I'd be in a lot of trouble. And I couldn't give him one of the kids, because I'd be in trouble as well. And I really wanted my banana milkshake, you see. And I looked down at it, and I looked back at him, and I was like, and I felt terrible. I felt really selfish, because I was like, oh, there's this poor homeless guy here, you know, sat with his back against the wall, sweating profusely, and I thought, you poor thing. And here I am, not wanting to give up my £2 McDonald's milkshake. So anyway, I walked past him, and I went round the corner, and then, you know that little voice in the back of your head? It won. So I turned back round and I checked in my pockets to see how much cash I had, and I had about £2.50, £3. And I went up to him and I said, look, I'm about to enjoy this milkshake, but I think you should have one as well. So look, I don't want to give you mine because I want it. But listen, here's £2.50. There's a McDonald's just down there. I would love for you to go and have a milkshake. And he goes, Oh, that'd be wonderful. But I said, look, promise me, because you're not supposed to give homeless people money, so they say.
Yeah.
Because it gets spent on drugs or alcohol or whatever. So I said, look, you've got to promise me something, though. I need you to go get a milkshake. Will you do that? And he said, yeah. And I future paced him, so that was me checking. I said, so what flavour are you going to get? He said, strawberry. I love strawberry. I said, right, promise me one thing. You go get a strawberry milkshake. You come back here. You sit with your back against the wall and close your eyes as you savour the strawberry flavour. Will you do that for me? Yes, it's helpful. And up he got, and he literally ran in the direction of McDonald's. Now, I don't know if he actually went to McDonald's or not. And I know some people would say, well, it's not for you to dictate. He could have been starving to death. You know, well, if he was starving to death, I might not have given him the money. I wanted him to enjoy the milkshake like a free man, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a bit in the film, The Shawshank Redemption, which I don't know if you've seen that film, but where they're sat on the top of the building and they've just put loads of tar on the top of this building, and the prison warden gets them a barrel of beer with ice in it.
Mm.
And the guy who, whatever the main guy is, I forget his name, in that film, he sat with his son in the back feeling like a free man, and it was that I remembered that I wanted this guy to feel. And I just, it was just really, for that one guy at that moment in time, it was that's so nice, you know. And it's, we can make that change tomorrow, tonight, in the morning, whatever. We can go out and we can change someone's perception of the world just by doing one random act of kindness to someone who really needs it.
Yeah, that's what it's about, isn't it? It's just doing something nice, which is unexpected.
And unexpected, yeah. And you don't need a lot of money for that, and you don't need a lot of time for that. Just walking past someone and giving them a smile.
Exactly.
It can make a world of difference for someone.
Yeah.
What I'd be interested to know, what does your typical day look like now? So, for example, for me, I get up quite late. I don't tend to work a huge amount if I can help it. I'm guessing you guys are slightly opposite to that.
Not really, to be honest.
Cool.
I'm not a morning person by any means, Dan. And, you know, the first time, so after, I probably get up, I don't know, probably about 7 or thereabouts. But the first probably hour and a half at least is my time. So I don't tend to do meetings or anything like that before 9:30, in fact, because I then have time to I listen to audiobooks every single day.
Right.
Absolutely love them. And it gives me a chance to listen to books, get some inspiration, but also think about what I need to be doing and get my thoughts in order. And
can I ask you, why audiobooks and not the written word?
Because it means I can be doing other things, that chores and things, all the usual stuff you still have to do, but you're also listening at the same time, so you're taking in information. And I also listen to audiobooks and go to the gym and things like that, and I absolutely love them. I love them. I can't get enough of them. When I'm travelling, I always have tons of books on my phone.
Brilliant. And I'm the same. For me, it's podcasts, not necessarily books. And I used to read a lot, a book a week easily, sometimes two, you know, because I just used to be reading all the time because I needed that knowledge. And what's happened in the last couple of years, and it's, I used to enjoy buying the book, the physical paper book. I've now got a Kindle, and I fly a lot, obviously, to and from Spain and the UK. And so I've got the Kindle, but I just listen to podcasts just because I can do it anywhere, in the car or when I'm running, cycling, whatever. It just makes life so much easier.
Yeah, I have a ton of podcasts as well. And what I love about them is the podcasts are a bit different. So at the moment, I've been listening to some of the old Steve Jobs ones.
Okay.
And it's really nice because you actually see them and you can experience what they're about a bit more.
Yeah.
And that's really quite nice and quite refreshing. And
actually, why we do these podcasts is because we want to get behind the persona that everybody, of a mask, if you like, that everybody puts out, and just get under the bonnet and have a tinker and have a play about and just see what's going on in your mindset and just find, and other guests, obviously, and find out what's really going on.
Yeah, and absolutely everything I do is about people. It always has been. So I find that fascinating. And it's very, very refreshing. Absolutely love it. I'm quite a slow reader, in all honesty.
Yeah.
And so it would take me a little while to sort of get through a book. But audiobooks I can fly through, and I absolutely love them. I listen to them double speed. Apart from your podcast, because when I listen to your podcast double speed, I can't understand them.
Yes, it might be my northern twang, but what you should be saying, Tuxia, is that you like to listen from half speed because, you know, you're taking in so much information, and you love the sound of my voice. And okay, so you listen to a lot of audiobooks, and then do you eat in, do you eat out, do you cook? Do you guys cook together? Davin's just left work, I believe.
Yeah, he left work about 3 weeks ago.
Wonderful. How was it like having Davin around the house?
Crazy. Crazy. It's just really bizarre because for years I've been working either at home or client side. And so you would expect it. You get into some sort of routine, don't you?
Yes.
And for the stuff I do, especially on the CRM when I'm running analytics or things like that, I need to have unbroken time, because what happens is you go down, you start analysing information and you see something, you see a pattern in the data and you want to go and explore it more. But as soon as you have an interruption, it takes you back, and so then you have to start that process again. But having said that, it's been fantastic with Davin here as well, because it means we don't have, we never have had a real 9-to-5 of any sort. But it means that, you know, we can pop out for lunch if we want to do that. We can go to the gym at 4 o'clock when it's dead quiet and then come back and work. So it's completely varied, and that's what's really nice about it. So all of our days are very different. From about 9:30, I will absolutely chunk time because we have so much to do, and it allows me, by chunking time, it allows me to focus on a specific action rather than sort of jumping backwards and forwards, which I don't find is effective.
No, but jumping backwards and forwards is a strategy that a lot of people try to do, and they do it very badly.
Yeah.
And actually, there's nothing like just going and doing one thing, getting that one thing done properly, and then moving on to the next thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's quite good. But Devin's sort of progressing talks and things like that at the moment on the crowdfunding business, which is great. And I'm just focusing a little bit more on some of the CRM stuff and getting the books out.
I actually found it when I left work, I was 29, and I wanted to leave work before I was 30, really. And so I did in the May, before the July, so I did it before I was 30. But I found the transition from working full-time and having four walls or a boss and then not having four walls and a boss, I found that really difficult, and it took 18 months for me to acclimatise to not going into work.
Really?
Yeah, really.
I absolutely love it. And when I set up the CRM business was set up in 2000, and I set up the business with one other person. We used to have meetings on the beach.
Brilliant.
It was just absolutely amazing. You can just do whatever you want. And the motivation for actually working was you didn't get paid if you didn't work.
Yes.
And so for me, that was the motivation. But, you know, we still loved what we did. But you remove having to be in an office in some sort of cubby hole and that type of thing, and it's amazing, absolutely amazing, and I love it.
So have you removed structure from your day completely, or have you still got a form of structure, it's just not well defined?
Oh, I think I would be lying if I said I have a structure, apart from, you know, the morning is very specific, so audiobooks, get my head in the right space, check my emails, that type of thing. And then get on with the chunk time that I've got. But because we do quite a lot, every day is very different. So we have a ton of meetings. So whilst the activities are pretty much the same every day, there's no set times for anything.
Yeah. And in terms of social media, do you get stuck on Facebook, do you find?
I do a little bit. I try and stay away from it, to be honest. So I do post on social media, on all the accounts we've got, that type of thing as well. I use Twitter more than I use Facebook, funnily enough. But it's dead quick anyway. But I don't get distracted by any social media.
So I'm just looking at, I use Chrome, and I've got a little app installed on Chrome, and I forget what it's called. I'm just looking at the stats. On Facebook, in terms of tabs opened, 37% of my time is spent on Facebook, according to this, which sounds like a huge amount. But that's when I'm working on the internet in some way. The next one is Google. The next one is Twitter. And that's 8, 6, and 6%. So Facebook takes a huge amount of my time. But then, in terms of generating cash, for my business, which is coaching, I generate a significant proportion of my cash for that from Facebook.
Yeah.
And we're growing Twitter at the moment. We've just gone over 12,000 followers, and I think we've grown that by about 300 or 400 in the last 2 weeks, which is quite nice.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it? And then we, in terms of CRM, should mention that, shouldn't I, seen as your CRM expert, we're getting between 10 and 20 opt-ins every single day, so that takes up quite a bit of time in terms of setting it up. But we set up some Twitter ads just to drive to a squeeze page for the podcast, and then we get people's email addresses, so that's how we're generating leads. I just find it really interesting talking about that stuff, and I know other people listening in want to know what those numbers are, because it's something either to aim for, or it's something to go, fantastic, I'm doing better than Dan, that's brilliant, which is great from my point of view, you know, especially clients, because it means it's working. But when I look at the stats in terms of Facebook, it's pretty scary, 37.5%. It's got to get down to... Last week it was under 20, but this week it's massively high. I don't know why. I need to look into that myself, really.
I'll tell you why, though. It might be... Does it accommodate sort of when you're still logged in but not using it, or is it sexual usage?
No, it doesn't. It's just when that tab is open. So maybe, and I do try and do this, but I reckon I fail quite often. I try and open a blank tab to leave that open when I'm not there.
Yeah.
And I do leave, I mean, I work off a PC back at the villa, and then when I'm travelling, I'm on a laptop. But I leave it switched on all the time.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm wondering if the PC is open on Facebook. I'm going to log into the PC after this call. And if so, close that down.
Might be skewing your results, Dan.
Yeah, it could be. Isn't it funny? So it's coincidence, not causality.
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay, so in terms of who you admire, so we all have role models, and those role models change as we change as well, I find. Who would you say your current role models are? Who do you aspire to be like more? And obviously you can't include me on that, obviously, because that would obviously be at the top. But other than me, who else would you aspire to be like, male or female? It doesn't matter.
I think for me, from a business standpoint, it would be Steve Jobs and Richard.
Why? Because he was quite... He was pretty depressed all the time, I think, Steve. I've not read the book, but I understand he was pretty depressed all the time.
Dan, you have to get that book. It is amazing.
Is it?
It's
right.
One
I shall
of my
do that.
Favorite books ever, and I, you know, I've had it probably 2 years now or something like that, and I listen to it at least twice a year. And it's a massive book.
I shall get the audio version. It saves me lugging around such a large book.
But it's fantastic. What I love about Steve Jobs is, yes, he was a bit cranky and all that stuff, and it comes across in the book, but his attention to detail and to the customer journey is unrivaled. And he just had this vision, and he would see things that other people didn't see.
Yeah.
And he stuck to his guns. He didn't compromise, and I think that's what made him a little bit cranky, I suppose. But,
you know, I would say he's not cranky. It's just that everybody else is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm cranky, I'm not. There's nothing wrong with me. It's just everybody. It's just the world needs shifting over to my perception.
Yeah. But he achieved some amazing things. And you ask anybody who worked with him when he was growing Apple and also Pixar, the people who were working with him, they did all say that whilst he was difficult to work with at times, they wouldn't change it for the world.
And what about a female? Who would you aspire to be like from the female?
I don't know.
So before we came on this call, before we started recording the podcast, we were just talking very briefly about Michelle Moan.
Yeah.
And she runs the Bravissimo brand, which is an underwear brand for ladies. So just tell me a little bit more about her, because you were looking at into some of the stuff that she'd gone through in terms of growing that business.
Yeah, she had so many challenges, and she had an alternative, or she has an alternative view as well. So when she was so passionate about getting this sort of push-up bra thing out, and she'd used all the money she had, and she was struggling to get it in front of people. And so her marketing strategy with the money that she had left was to employ a ton of students, dress them up in white coats and have banners saying, "You're going to put us out of business," and pretend they were plastic surgeons. Yeah. And she did that outside of Selfridges and got PR coverage.
That's amazing.
And then it sort of went from there. She sent it out to, I think it was Oprah and a number of others, and it just ballooned from there. And so she has an alternative way of looking at stuff and just getting around the challenges that she was facing. But she also had some major challenges in terms of losing a lot of money to a supplier and, you know, the banks were actually sort of getting ready to shut the business down. And I think it was an hour before she managed to get the funding that she needed to keep going. And she just kept fighting one thing after another. She lost her business at one point because of share allocations or something. She came back and she bought her business back. But she just never gives up. And she's actually really funny as well. And it was lovely to see her speak and to hear her story.
Do you know, I think there's a real gap for female entrepreneurs. So, for example, when I asked you the question, which female do you admire? And you sort of struggled to come up with a word,
yeah.
A name.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, who can you choose from, really? Especially in the UK, there's not that many people. There's a lady who runs Ann Summers. The lady who runs maybe Jimmy Choo's. There's Michelle Moan. I mean, even I struggle. Obviously, in America, you've got, like, Oprah. But then after Oprah, who else is this?
Funny, isn't it?
Probably, I can't remember the lady's name. She's a film actress, but she's, I think, become one of the first, or certainly one of a few female billionaires. She's become a billionaire because she's one smart cookie. So she's taken the money that she's earned from film and then put that into a business and grown the business.
Yeah.
And I just love stuff like that, but you just don't hear enough about it. There's loads of men who are all on TV because they're the only ones who get asked to go on telly. But it's just disappointing that there's just not enough powerful female figures in the media to inspire other women. And it's just wrong. You know, when I look at guests to invite for the podcast, and especially in property, and that networking event, I reckon it's the same numbers, there's not that many females that go to those events. And it's a shame, I think, because they bring so much more to the table than men who just, you know, we're just quite aggressive sometimes, aren't we, in how we want to do things.
I think it's changing. The reason I was struggling was, for me, it's got to be, I don't know what people have gone through. I only know about Michelle Moon because I heard her speak, and her story is really, really powerful. I'm sure there's others out there, but you just don't hear about them. And for me, that's the shame, because there are people who've done some amazing things, and it'd be really nice to get them out there and for people to hear their stories, because they've got some, I'm sure they have some amazing things to say, and people will learn a lot from them.
Yeah.
It's a really difficult one. It's funny, when you asked me, there was no one that came to mind, which is really quite scary.
Yeah, I would agree. Okay, and so if somebody wanted to start on the path that you've done, so basically the path as I can see it, and it ties into my sort of three rules. So the three rules are, you cut your costs, you generate cash, and then you move the difference into wealth, like property or some other asset-based income generation strategy, whatever that happens to be. So you've done that because you, both yourself and Davin as consultants generated cash. You then capitalised on that through creating books, which will help you gain credibility, which is an awesome thing to do. That will cut your sales cycle down significantly because you've already done the hard work because someone's read your book. And then you've moved that then into long-term wealth, which is property. And then you've gone back to another business, which is crowdfunding, which will generate more cash. And that cash will then go back into yet more, I was going to say properties, but I have a feeling it will be other type of assets as well.
Yeah, it will be other assets. It's just splitting the base, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So if you had to start again, let's say you were forced tomorrow to restart everything from scratch, you got £5,000 in a bank, what would you do?
£5,000. I would actually do property.
You would do property?
Yeah.
And how would you do property with £5,000?
Either lease options.
Okay.
Based upon what I know now.
Yes.
Either lease options or something like rent to rent. Not, for me, not the best strategy, but one that generates cash flow. And to work with a pot like that, it's about generating cash flow to start with in order to build up a pot to then start investing elsewhere.
So you wouldn't spend, you wouldn't create a sales funnel that leads to a product that you then sell. So you wouldn't spend a couple of £1,000 on Facebook ads. You'd just go straight to property.
I would go to property. I know with £5,000, people have been very successful sort of selling affiliate products, stuff like that, again, in order to generate cash. But it's not something that I know. I would have to learn it if I was going to do that.
Yeah.
And so based upon what I know property really well. And so I know I could use that £5,000 wisely.
Yeah.
The other option is, depending on what else was going on, is to get involved in crowdfunding in some shape or form.
Perfect. You know, interestingly, in the podcast with Barry Davis, I can't remember what number it is, number 2 or 3, he was down to his last 50 quid at one point. And he had no other choice but to get going. And he just did rent to rent to begin with.
Yeah.
And obviously now he's doing much, much bigger deals, over £500,000 deals, 18 rooms, and he's making money on those deals instantly by refurbing and taking the cash back out and then renting it out. Just amazing how, if you're motivated, you can actually do whatever it is that you choose to do. Unfortunately, most people are not at that point where they need to do something, so they end up never doing anything. And for most people, they're just comfortable. And you know when you hear people say, well, do you want to be a millionaire? No, no, I just want to be comfortable. Well, there you go, most people are comfortable.
Mm.
And that's why they have to get up and go to work every day, rather than being financially free with all the benefits that we've talked about. You know, all that free time that you guys have to pick and choose what you want to do, to go, was it, what was the terminology in the plane for you?
In the what?
Not aerobics, what was it?
Aerobatics.
Aerobatics, that's just amazing. So the aerobatics is just you in a plane doing crazy stuff.
Leap, leap. My goal, Dan, is to be part of or to get involved with the Red Bull Air Races.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, the average age is probably about 55, so I've got a bit of time left.
You've got a bit of time, yeah, I would suggest that you've got a bit of time.
But actually, I absolutely love, I love being in the air anyway, and recently I spent more time doing, not aerobatics, but sort of steeper turns and things like that, where you do start pulling G's, brilliant. And I loved it, absolutely.
How many G's have you gone up to?
Not many, 2 I think it was.
2's still pretty heavy.
When you're in control of a plane and you're pulling 2 G's, then I suppose it is, but it was just so much fun. I came down and I was just absolutely buzzing.
Have you GoPro'd any of this?
Sorry?
Have you GoPro'd it?
No.
You do know, of course, but if it's not on camera, it didn't happen.
That's fine. I'm all right with that. It's in my head, so I'm cool with that.
Just there's an airfield near where I live, and every so often you see people jumping out of a plane, and then once the people have jumped out of the plane, with parachutes obviously, the plane then takes a hard bank
yeah.
and then dives, and I think he's racing the parachutist down to the ground.
I've done that. I did that it was a place in Spain, in Puerto Brava.
Yeah.
And Devin went out and he was jumping out of planes at Imperial Brava, so I thought, you know what, I'll go out, and I did a bit of flying and stuff and got talking to the instructor or the person I was flying with, and I sort of said, you know what, I really want to do aerobatics and stuff, and the parachute planes are pretty decent planes and they're high performance. And so as soon as we came down, he said, wait here a second. He went to talk to another pilot. And they both came over, and the other pilot was like, I'm going up in this plane now, if you want to come and co-pilot it. So I literally just dropped everything. And we did that. We did exactly that. So you basically go up, you watch all the people jumping out the back, and then you bomb it back down to the ground and beat them down to the ground. It was amazing.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I've seen it, and it looks dangerous, and I'm guessing that in England, you can't do that. We have health and safety in England. In Spain, there's no such thing as health and safety.
Probably they probably don't call it racing, but they do need to get down before the parachutists. So, skydivers. So it probably does happen in the UK as well. But it's just
amazing.
Just so much fun, and I absolutely love it. I recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, I'll pass on that. What's interesting as well is, you know, we talk about like future goals, and your goal isn't just like, oh, to buy 20 houses or anything like that. No, no, you want to be part of the Red Bull Air team. And, you know, when we talk to guests and we ask them about some of their goals, and we realise they're really crazy. A friend of mine, he's recently single, so he's just started going out on Match.com. And I've got to be careful what I say, because he may be listening at some point. So we were talking about some of the people that he's met on Match, and they describe themselves as being adventurous. And this guy goes, I mean, one of his bucket list things to do was to spear a fish with a spear gun and then cook it, which I thought was quite a cool thing to do. And then he's done that. He goes sailing in Greece. He goes, I don't know what they call it, but it's like deep sea diving, but you just hold your breath. I don't know what it's called, but he's done that. Yeah. He's gone swimming with sharks. We went to Bosnia last year to look for a pyramid that doesn't exist. But he's very adventuresome. So he meets people on Match, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm really adventurous. And he goes, oh, what sort of stuff have you done? And they say stuff like, well, I went whitewater rafting about 5 years ago. And he's like, oh, right, okay. And it's just because the standard of adventure that he does. I mean, he's done banger rallies and for Africa, dropping supplies off for school children and little villages that haven't got schools, all sorts of stuff, you know? Mm. And it's just the standard to which we aspire to or dream to is very much different. So if you're listening to this and your dream is to own 10 properties, seriously, you need to get out more and you need to live more and you need to go out. And the world is a much, much bigger place than how we see it. And to have a dream like flying for Red Bull, I mean, how awesome is that?
It's just being part of the team in some shape or form would be amazing. Yeah. And to be with, even with sort of flying with pilots who fly the Red Bull Air Race, would just be amazing, wouldn't it?
It absolutely would. I was talking to Jim Halliburton, I've mentioned a couple of times. One of his goals in one of the years was to buy 50 properties in a year.
Which he did, right?
Which he did, yeah. And he said, it's scary because you set this massive, unachievable goal and then you hit it.
Mm.
And I can't remember who said it, but it was something like, the problem, oh, I think it was Les Brown.
Yeah.
Les Brown? And he said, the problem isn't that we set our goals too big and miss them. It's that we set our goals too small and hit them.
Yeah.
We don't set anything afterwards. And if you're not setting a big enough goal, then you're never going to get anywhere near your dreams because your goals aren't big enough.
Yeah.
If you said to you...
You're just comfortable, aren't you? So then you plod along and, you know, it's all nicey-nicey comfortable stuff. But it doesn't push you. It doesn't take you to that next level.
I think being comfortable is one of the dream killers, actually.
Yeah.
And I think when I look at some of the stuff that I've had to do where you need $2,000 to hit the mortgage run that month, you know, we're going back quite some time now, but I remember it as though it was yesterday because it was very stressful. And you've got a day to find $2,000 and you find it and you pay that mortgage run. You know, you've had a couple of tenants that didn't pay, boiler's gone down, whatever it needs to be, right? And you find a way to make it happen. It just comes down to how motivated you are and making sure that you know what you need to do in order to achieve the goal.
Mm, exactly.
Have you got any advice for someone in terms of the pitfalls to avoid?
With regards to business or property?
Both.
Property for me would be if you are doing renovation projects.
Yeah.
It's going to cost you more than you think it is, especially for the first few until you get clear about what you're doing and how much things cost and stuff. So even if you get costings, I would always up that amount by at least 20%. Because that way you have the funds, you've accommodated for it in case it happens. So then you're not stressing at the 11th hour in terms of where am I going to find this additional money from.
Yeah, that's the last thing that you want right at the end of the... especially the first couple of deals that you're doing. And in business, what sort of pitfalls would you recommend for people to avoid?
I think pitfalls are, you can just focus on nothing and actually do a bit of this because it's really important, or, you know, you can become a bit of a perfectionist in every area and actually not achieve anything. I think sometimes you just have to get on with it, and if it's not 100%, that's all right, but you have to go with it, and the chances are you will make mistakes and things won't look as grand as you anticipate them to and all of that stuff. But for me, the most important thing is just to go and do it, because it's too easy to just focus on all the rubbish stuff, which actually it's not rubbish, it's important, but it's not important in terms of being able to grow a business. And I would always say, you know, think about your processes, think about your business, and think about your customers, and make sure you accommodate for them correctly.
Got it. Perfect. Now, if people want to contact you at Tuxia, what's the best website or email address? You don't have to give an email address out. We prefer to give out a domain name if you can. But what's the best way of contacting you or finding out more about you guys?
The best way is probably just contact us through either marketing@focus2020.co.uk.
Okay.
Or simple backing website. But Twitter, you know what, my name is Atuksha Poonawasi. If you do a search on Twitter, you'll only find me.
Perfect. So Atuksha, I'd just like to say thank you very much for coming on the podcast today. I really, really appreciate it. I love it when we get the chance to speak, just finding out all the stuff that you're doing. It's just, it takes us a while to get through it all because you're just so busy with lots of great things that you're doing. And I think it's inspirational for people to listen to that. You know, when people say, I'll just do one thing and concentrate on that, that's never been me either, quite frankly. But for someone else who's got two or three or four big things all at the same time, and you're handling, well, in fact, you're not only handling them well, you're thriving in that environment. I think it's really inspirational to see.
Oh, thanks so much, Dan. It's been fantastic talking to you. I love it. Absolutely love it.
That's my pleasure. Thank you once again, and we'll catch up real soon.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Take care.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.